The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Smith, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The third matter on our calendar this morning is the case of Teresa Corrine McNabb versus John Michael Kieselishian. The file number is A20-1603. It appears that only the appellant is appearing today. And you will have 15 minutes for your oral argument, and just please introduce yourself and your client prior to beginning that oral argument. This matter is being recorded. You may proceed at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Carl Blondin, appearing on behalf of the appellant, John Kieselishian. Your Honors, this is actually the second appeal on the same hearing. There is another appeal before the court that's A20-1172, where we had just recently received an order addressing the issue of mootness. Additionally, this case is important not only because of this year, but the district court has made it clear that the outcome of this appeal will be impacting the court's decision on tax issues for the years 2020 through 2024, an additional 5 years of tax returns. Your Honors, my client and I submitted a detailed affidavit on the facts and a memorandum of law stating very specifically why the district court had the authority to change the exemptions. The issue in this case is the parties qualifying for premium tax credits, not the children.
The children. So, counsel, can I ask you? So, in your brief, what you say is the most significant change has been in the federal healthcare law, which I understand counts household members differently under the ACA, is what you argue. This change significantly affects the appellant. So my question for you for 2019, new year we're dealing with, what precisely is the financial difference, and point me in the record in your affidavit where you say it, between the insurance costs that your client would have had to pay to insure himself only, not a family plan, but himself only, with or without that exemption? Because to me, that would show what the difference is between having the exemption or not, what it cost him to insure or would have if he covered just himself in 2019. Can you tell me where that is so we can see what that number is?
This would be my client's affidavit of November 26, 2019. And I apologize, I should have written down the item number.
Because it's that dollar difference that you're saying is significant. So I don't, I'm not sure I understand precisely where you told us what that dollar difference is.
Okay, if I can look at the affidavit, I think, well, part of what I set out, or what my client set out in his affidavit, would have been on page 13 of the affidavit, paragraphs 52 and 53. 53 points out expenses that would go close to zero if my client.
What's the difference in healthcare coverage insurance that he would have had to, that he had to pay in 2019 as a result of not getting the exemption? Or would have had to pay had he only insured himself? I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? That's what you're saying substantially changed, is that health insurance cost him more. And my question is just simply how much more?
Well, he had a kidney stone out, and I think it was over $10,000. But I'm not sure if that's part of the record.
I'm just figuring what's the difference between what he would pay to insure himself without the exemption compared to with the exemption. Isn't that what we need to look at? Because you're saying the exemption should have switched.
Yes. Well, his premium would be about $44 per month versus $370 per month plus an $8,000 deductible.
Okay, and where is that?
Okay.
But it wasn't just himself, because he had the right to claim the other child that year, didn't he?
Yes, and this will impact him going forward. The decision of this court today will impact my client going forward for years 2020 through 2024, when the last child turns 18 and presumably graduates from high school. He's an excellent student. I have no doubt it'll happen.
And as the numbers, but it would help me to show me where those numbers are that you just referred to, the difference in cost, and also to tell me whether those numbers relate to insuring only himself, because I think the wife carries the children on, or mother carries the children on her plan, right, under the J&D?
She does. However, Ramsey County has said that, you know, that is insufficient for insurance. It's one of these policies with incredibly high deductibles. Ramsey County doesn't even consider it insurance. My client therefore has the children under Minnesota Care, which is very good insurance.
So are the numbers that you are giving me for the family plan, or are they?
For on page 13 of the affidavit.
Okay.
Paragraph 53. That is what, that would just be my client. That would just be his cost.
On page 13 of the affidavit?
Page 13 and 17 on the affidavit, page 53. That would just be the cost for my client alone.
Paragraph 53 on page 13?
Of his affidavit dated November 26, 2019. Those are the examples. Okay. The insurance available to him and what it would cost just for him alone.
And what is that amount?
Excuse me?
For him alone, it's $44. Is that what you're claiming?
Yes. And the children under medical assistance are zero. But my client, his premium would go to $44 compared to the Medica Gold at $373.53 per month, and a out-of-pocket maximum of $8,000.
The Medicaid Gold, or the Gold at $373, is what you're saying that he did pay for himself only, or would pay for himself only?
It's what he would pay for himself only.
Okay.
Time this affidavit was executed. I don't know how it's changed since then. Mm-hmm. And as the court is aware, these things are constantly increasing, some years worse than others. This is I respectfully submit, an issue that's important statewide, and in part because it appears that the district court seems to have made a decision that's at odds with the Supreme Court's decision in the Rogers case. And what we're looking at needs to be the benefit to the parties. The statute sets out four factors under 518A.38 subdivision 7. And one is looking at the financial resources of the parties. And yes, my client, since the judgment decree, has had a higher percentage increase in income, but his income went up $14,000 as compared to $33,000 for the respondent. He has gone from being somewhat poor to a more middle-class income, whereas there's no question the respondent here is a high-income individual. The way economists would define it, being about twice the average, more than twice the average income in the state of Minnesota.
Can you remind me, counsel, when you were talking about, you know, the impact of this, and how this works with the two children, the original J&D would have the exemption alternate, is that right?
Yes, and that was before the statute was enacted, which is another problem. The district court says Judge Cleary considered that when making his decision. No, he couldn't have, because the statute was not enacted until 5 years after the judgment decree was entered. So we have the district court relying upon an erroneous interpretation, erroneously stating that the law was in effect, and the trial court judge, at that time Judge Cleary, who's now retired from your court, used it. No, he didn't. The law had not been enacted. He couldn't have foreseen the future. He made his decision based on the law at that time.
I'm just wondering if it alternates. I think you had.
Yes.
If we were to, for example, affirm, and it's going to alternate, I suppose the cost will then vary.
Yes, yeah, so very, very significantly from year to year.
So it won't be all of the years that your client would.
No, it would be
a difference. Okay.
Swing from year to year. Very, very significant difference. There'd be very little difference in the respondent's lifestyle or ability to support the remaining child. It'd be very, very insignificant. She would be looking at a $4,000 per year advantage. That's what the head of household is, which is another statement that the, if we look at the order denying the motion, which is the order being appealed, filed in district court on October 27, 2020, the court says the $4,000, and then it talks ability to lose the head of household exemption. Well, that $4,000 is the head of household exemption, as compared to, you can see, the tremendous amounts of money that my client would be paying for insurance. Insurance premium alone exceeding $4,000, plus, you know, out of pocket of, you know, $8,000 a month, potentially. The respondent gets her insurance through her employer, and the respondent works as an accountant. It's a small firm. It's a terrible insurance policy with, you know, incredibly high deductibles, which is why Ramsey County has said the kids are going on medical assistance, because my client cannot, at his income level, be expected to be shelling out, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. And as I pointed out, again, it's the statute talks about the benefits to the parties.
Can I ask you this? Is there anything in the record that compares what your client paid for health insurance for the children before the ACA and what your client paid after the passage of the ACA?
Your Honor, my knowledge of the record is not that detailed. I can't answer that question.
Isn't that the information? I mean, wouldn't you have the burden of proof on that factor? To show that the impact on the dependents exemption on either party's ability to claim a premium tax credit or premium subsidy?
I don't think we go back to that. I respectfully submit that we look at statute 518A.34, subdivision 7, that sets out what must be considered, and the burden of proof that I must meet is under that subdivision 7, and I respectfully submit that what my client and I submitted was sufficient for the trial court to make a determination. Yes, looking at what we have today under these very different circumstances, with laws being passed that Judge Cleary could not even imagine when he made the decision, yes, it was sufficient. No, it is just not the same. It is not.
I don't think you understand my question. My question is, with regard to the factors set forth in Subdivision 7, you would agree that you would have the burden of proof on showing that your client met those factors or satisfied those factors. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. And vis-a-vis the health insurance issue, which is, I understand, is the last factor, is there anything in the record that shows what your client paid for these children's health insurance before the ACA as compared with after the ACA?
I cannot recall, Your Honor. I know that the record is very long. Many costs have been submitted and many affidavits over the years. I suspect there may be something there, but I can't answer definitively. I can't remember. I don't want to mislead the court. I try to be very, very careful.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And then, counsel, I know I was asking you to focus on what's the difference between what he would have paid in 2019 for himself or with or without the exemption. Does the record tell us the difference between what he was actually paying for insurance in 2019, whatever that amount was, versus what he claims he would, that $44 a month, I think is what you said he established in his affidavit that he would be paying?
I believe the record does show that. I can't remember it. I see I'm just about out of time. But for the children's health insurance is not a factor in the decision.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out the cost difference. I mean, when you say that the ACA, clearly the ACA is legislation, if I may, presiding Judge Hooten, just continue for a moment. I understand that the ACA came into effect, passed in 2010 and changes over time. But you're asking us to say that the district court abused its discretion in not finding a substantial change. And it's hard for us to, your brief doesn't tell us what that financial difference is. And for us to have to walk through the affidavit and try and reconstruct that. I mean, you're doing the appeal here. It's helpful to us, with you as the appellant, to tell us what is that amount and where do we find it? That's what I think is difficult here.
I appreciate it. First, I apologize for chewing on my pen. I was nervous. In my own office, it's just a little, it's not as formal as the courtroom. The affidavit does state the difference. I can't remember. I have to pull it out, go through it, paragraph by paragraph. I see I'm past my 15 minutes. We did set it out. This is, I admit, it's a big case from my perspective with the complexity of the tax law, yet it's very simple. We're not looking at the children's insurance. We're looking at the tax impact on the parents. And it's limited to the financial impact is limited to $4,000 for the respondent. The impact on my client in premiums alone exceeds that. But then there are also deductibles if he has, it could be an extra $8,000. And we look at I do take issue with the trial court's characterization that my client is doing better now than the respondent is doing. His income went up $14,000 from about $25,000 to $39,000. Her income went up from $68,000 to $101,000. I think in all candor, it just stretches credulity to accept that interpretation by the district court. And that is, I think, quite an abuse of discretion.
All right. Well, thank you. Any other questions from any of the judges? All right. Thank you very much. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory period of time. Thank you for your presentation here today.